Hello, Adam Buxton here. Honestly, I can't remember if there's swearing in this podcast or not. If there is, there's really not much of it. What there is much of is inconsequential chat. Here we go.
I added one more podcast to the giant podcast bin. Now you have plucked that podcast out and started listening.
I took my microphone and found some human folk. Then I recorded all the noises while we spoke. My name is Adam Buxton, I'm a man. I want you to enjoy this, that's the plan.
Hey, how you doing? It's Podjob here, recklessly tossing out his razor-edged chat hat into the public sphere. That's not a nice image, is it? That could cause a lot of damage, not to mention decapitation. And that's not the point of the podcast. What is the point? The point, I suppose, is to communicate some kind of vaguely thoughtful levity. That's what it says on my contract with myself. In which case, a better thing to line the edge of the chat hat with would be like strawberry-flavoured sugar. A bit like the rim of a strawberry margarita. Oh, mate. Come on. Friday morning, though, isn't it? It's too early for the strawberry margaritas. Yeah, that would be better, I think, for Podjob's chat hat. But listen, that's probably all a bit mystifying. For anyone who has never seen Goldfinger. Or anyone who has. How you doing, Podfellows? Nice to be back with you. For this, the last in the current season of the Adam Buxton podcast. Thank you very much indeed for all your continued friendly and supportive messages on SoundCloud and on Twitter and on my blog.
I've got a blog, I've got a blog. Rudy, Rudy, Schmoody, Rudy, blog, blog, blog. I've got a blog. Here's the address, here's the address. It's adam-buxton.co.uk, so check it out.
And on the blog you will find posts for, I think, every episode of the podcast thus far. Actually, except for the Rob Delaney one. I just got swamped that week and didn't have time to do a corresponding blog post. But there's one for the conversation I had with Catelyn Moran last week. Just because I wanted to link to some of the things that we were talking about, particularly the books that I mentioned, Delusions of Gender and The Female Brain. And in fact, I include a message from someone called John. He sent me a message via my blog. He says, I'll quote the beginning of it. With reference to your comments about brain gender at the beginning of the Catelyn Moran podcast, the consensus within mainstream neuroscience and psychology, which immediately makes me think, wow, John is in mainstream neuroscience and psychology. Although I have no idea whether he is or not. You could get in touch and tell me, John. Is that brain gender is influenced by both nature and nurture. Melissa Hines, director of Cambridge University's Hormones and Behaviour Research Lab, arguably the UK's leading expert in this field. Well, you've got to watch out for the word arguably, though, right? Uses the books you mentioned at the beginning of a panel debate to illustrate how evidence is often distorted to support polemical arguments. And I include a link to the YouTube video of that interesting panel debate there. But I'm exactly the kind of person, of course, that is being buffeted by these pop science books and polemical debates, because I'm very easily swayed when it comes to this kind of thing. I'm like the plastic bag in American Beauty, being blown around by the prevailing winds, waiting to be filled with other people's heavy shopping. Anyway, so that's the blog. This week, Louis Theroux. My old friend Louis, the journalist, documentarian and filmmaker. And this is another couple of conversations from the couple of days we spent in Los Angeles last year in Louis' garage, chatting about various things. So shut up, Buckles. Play a jingle and roll a convo. Okay, here we go. Do you like it when ladies put on makeup in public, on public transport, etc.?
I can't say that I've...
It's not something you think about.
...really ever given it a second thought.
Here's what I always think. Like, why... It seems weird to me that the whole business of putting on makeup for a lady or a man or whoever chooses to wear makeup, right, is a... what they're trying to do is make themselves look special and nice and exciting, right? And that's a bit of theatre. I mean, I would associate makeup with theatre, and, you know, even if a person is in real life, it's still a sort of theatrical gesture, right, to put on makeup. And that is something that you would want to do in private. Like, taking the theatre analogy, you would do that in your dressing room, and then you would come out on stage, as it were, at the party or wherever you're going to be. And ta-da, look, oh, you look great, kind of thing. But what's the point of... You wouldn't, like, get ready for a show at the theatre in front of the audience.
No, you wouldn't.
So I don't understand why women think it's acceptable to do all their makeup routine in front of you on the train, for example. Like, I was sat opposite a lady who must have been, I don't know, in her mid-30s, taking a long time to... I mean, she was at it for about an hour, I would say, from start to finish, putting her whole face on. And she did a great job. But I just thought, why are you doing it in front of everybody else? Who's this for? Is this just for one...
Not for you.
No, it's not for me.
Not for you. And I think that's the important point, isn't it? Because she's in private.
Yeah.
In her world, she's in private. She doesn't... You're a member of the technical team. You know, you're not a real person. You're
I'm
not,
crew.
You're not your crew. You're not paying public.
Yeah.
So she's mixing with the unwashed, such as yourself. And then when she gets to her work with the high-end personnel that she meets in her work, then that's showtime.
Yes.
The show hasn't started yet when she's mixing with Buckles.
So we should be slapping her on the back and saying, have a great one.
Yeah.
Break a leg.
Yeah. Well, although it might be one of those sets where the crew's not allowed to address the stars, you know? Like when Ricky Gervais... Apparently, that's terrible gossip, isn't it? Some of these stars, it's in their contract that you're not allowed to talk to them unless spoken to, or even look at them.
Right.
Have you not heard of that?
Yes, I have, but it
Who
seems
have you
like...
heard that in connection with?
Well...
Did you hear it with Ricky Gervais?
No, I didn't. I would be surprised. I would think that...
I know, that doesn't sound right.
It doesn't sound right. People have said it about people like Mariah Carey, you know. But even she denies strenuously her diva-ish behavior.
Her,
you know,
the only thing is she can only be photographed from one side, right? And she kicks up a fuss. If people try and photograph her bad side, she makes a big stink, which I thought was ludicrous until I saw a picture of her from the wrong side. She looks like a different person. It's actually quite weird. And I have a good side and a bad side.
Everyone does, sure.
I realised since then, so I kind of... Now I get that. I try not to make a stink about
it. It's one of those things that seems ridiculous when you hear about people requesting that when you're younger. You just think, how vain and silly. But, if you have to get your photograph taken a few times...
People used to say it was almost like one of those comedy... sort of off-the-peg comedy phrases. Are you getting my good side?
That's right. That's not my good side.
Yeah. But, there's something in that. I think really for you to feel odd... You know, it's women saving half an hour of the day as well, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Listen, I'm not putting...
On the tube. No one wants... No, on the tube, I mean, it's like being... I mean, it's a very odd space, especially those London deep line tubes. Not the Metropolitan line, but one of those really deep line tubes, like Piccadilly line, where it's barely high enough to stand upright.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's like in each other's faces, but pretending that they're not. I think you can get away with almost anything on there. I mean, I think you could practically go to the toilet without people making a fuss.
Sometimes people do. What about you could like wash your nuts?
Could put deodorant on and.
Yeah, do you reckon you could put deodorant?
Yeah.
On? I don't think you could put deodorant on.
Well, I mean, I reckon you.
I think that would be awful. There was some guy I went for a walk yesterday.
It's like eating on. Would you eat on the tube if it was crowded?
No.
You try not to, but.
But I mean, you know, I've done things that I know are not very good. Like I once had a sandwich. You know, I talked about this on the radio once, I think. But I went to see the film Sunshine with Edgar Wright, the talented film director. And I had a sandwich while we were watching the film. It was a turkey stuffing sandwich that I'd got from Tesco Metro on the way because I hadn't had lunch. And Edgar did not appreciate it at all because he's a cinephile, you know, and he wants the experience.
Well, you ate it during the movie.
And I did think I was embarrassed as soon as I opened this sandwich.
Was it sort of making crinkling, crackling?
No, because I really hate that. I mean, I hate noise. But then I was embarrassed because I opened it and it did. There was a like some food is odorless, right? So it's not going to be an issue. But this one, the turkey stuffing, had quite an aroma. And so I thought, hey, this is not ideal. But I've opened it now, and I am hungry, so I'm just going to have it. But I did notice Edgar, like, shifting around.
Really?
And sort of not saying anything, but clearly thinking, mate, you don't eat during a film, and you definitely don't. I mean, you can eat popcorn and all that stuff, I suppose, but even that's not ideal. But you definitely don't eat a turkey.
It was the noise. It was
sandwich.
The smell, not the noise.
I would say, yeah, yeah, because I was making no noise. I mean, it was really a joyless experience eating this sandwich because I was being so careful not to make any noise and I was so aware of
you have
Edgar's.
To do that thing of like not eating during the quiet bits and then when there's an explosion you just
eat. when all the bass kicks in and stuff as soon as Pinback emerged from the shadows and started terrorizing the crew then I would but then as if Edgar was controlling the whole universe. When I got on my way home from the film, I started feeling a little queasy. And by the time I got home, I was shivering uncontrollably and I had got food poisoning from this sandwich.
Wow.
I was in bed for a day and a half.
Karma.
Yeah, it's absolute. I learned my lesson.
What do you think about sitting in front of people when you get to the cinema? Like, do you think, oh, I better not sit in front of those people because then I'll be in front of them and they'll struggle to see.
I mean you're taller than I am, so that's more of an issue for you.
But not sitting down.
Really? No, because your head's still going to be poking. Tall people are still taller in a seat.
Well, I think most of it's in my legs.
Right. What does that mean? That's nonsense. Your torso and your body, that's taller than mine.
I think it's probably about the same as yours.
No, I'm a little gnomey.
No, I think probably from waist up, we're about the same height.
Anyway, to answer your question, no, I wouldn't sit. I would try and find somewhere where I wasn't sitting in front of someone. And even then, if it's a crowded cinema, I'm going to slump down as well. You know what I mean? And I certainly, there's no hats or anything like that going on, because that drives me
there's
nuts.
There's a cinema, an art house in my, I can't remember which one, it's in sort of, it's just between Haymarket and Leicester Square, and it's got a very bad rake, like almost flat. I don't want to badmouth it, but anyway, you don't get a good view.
Right.
And we sat down, but without really realising it, I guess we were in front of someone, and they flipping got up, walked round and sat in front of us.
To teach you a lesson?
Yeah. So childish.
Wow. Why couldn't they just have moved somewhere else? Yeah, that is weird. No, generally I would go to... Because the whole scenario makes me anxious. All that stuff makes me anxious. So I would usually go to the movies in the afternoon. Like, try and pick a quiet showing. Joe and I used to go. Whenever we would do our movie going, optimum time would be first showing Monday afternoon. When often we were the only people there.
Don't you like the vibe of a packed? It's like I saw Edge of Tomorrow a few nights back, and it was completely full. And it's hard to beat that feeling of an opening weekend where everyone in the cinema is really engaging. It's completely full. It's an amazing vibe.
That is, yes, that's a different experience, isn't it? But if you're going for just the comfort of watching the thing and engaging with it one-on-one, then I want a quiet showing. But yeah, I agree with you. I remember, did we go and see Die Hard in New York back in the day? Do you remember that?
I don't think I was at that, because I think Joe came and stayed with me afterwards and he was talking about it, and I went and saw it again.
Oh, yeah.
In Cape Cod.
Well, that was fun. But the Americans, I would say, are a bit too chatty in general in the cinema, don't you think? Just like unfiltered. No. It's as if they're like children and they're commenting on everything. And I've been to a few showings, so this is across all demographics, right?
Well, the cliche is that if you go to like a sort of inner city screening, like with a predominantly black audience,
yeah,
African American. I don't know if it applies in Britain, but that there's a lot of interaction with the screen.
Yeah, but I'm saying that that's the case
across the board.
Across the board, yeah. Because I went to a showing of a film the other day, and there weren't that many people in the screening, and there were mainly white faces there, and they were all just. And it was the film Chef, Jon Favreau. So, you know, not like a big kind of kicking and punching action adventure thing that you would think most people would be like, yeah, come on, woo! It was fairly, you know, tame and not the kind of thing that you would expect to be shouting out about. But people were still sort of saying, oh, yeah, you told him. Yeah, that's right. Oh, no. No, I don't believe it. All this kind of stuff.
Really?
Yeah. It's like, oh, that's got to hurt. All this crap.
That surprises me a little bit, actually.
That was at the ArcLight.
Really?
Yeah, that's a fancy cinema.
Yeah, yeah, that does surprise me. I mean, I like a bit of that.
I don't like a bit of that.
Do you not?
No. I want silence. Absolute silence. In Norwich, where I live in the East Anglia, that's one of the things that I thought, I'm going to really like it here, because you go to the Odeon, I guess it varies depending on what you're seeing, maybe, but my experience has been predominantly, you can go to a pretty full showing and people shut up and they just watch the movie. You know, there's no phones ringing, there's no commentary, there's none of that. It's great.
I still chuckle when I remember you went to see The Unbearable Lightness of Being, and then halfway through someone shouted out, "Unbearable!"
That's right.
And walked out.
And walked out. I was doing a show the other day in London, doing this show Bug that I do occasionally, and we were doing a special on XL Recordings, home of The Prodigy, White Stripes, Radiohead, Peaches, other world-beating acts. And the climax of the show was me asking the audience to choose between two classic, so-called classic Prodigy videos. One of them was, and this was a playlist that had been put together by the organizers of Bug. I hadn't chosen the videos, but they had said to me, okay, and at the end, ask the audience, because we don't have time to show all of them, but ask the audience to choose between the video for Breathe by The Prodigy and Smack My Bitch Up, right? You remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't personally like that video for Smack My Bitch Up. I remember when it came out. And it wasn't so much the sexism, although that was quite a big factor. I just thought it was a crap, stupid video, right?
Mm-hmm. With a twisty ending.
Yeah, it's all shot POV, right? Yeah. A horrible night out in Soho of someone who you assume is a man going up, getting absolutely hammered, like beer after beer, shot after shot, getting into a fight on a dance floor, grabbing a woman, and she slaps him and he kind of shoves her away. All the time you're assuming this is a he.
Yeah, it's very like debauched man out on the town.
And then like, you know, and vomiting into the sink and hoovering up drugs and all this stuff. It's really grimy. And then right at the end, goes to a hotel room, starts having sexual relations with another lady, and then the lady sort of gets up, I think, and flounces out at a certain point, and then you get a view of the person
in a mirror,
and it's a woman.
It's an attractive woman.
Back in your face. Right back in your face with your preconceptions. Because women can do that too. Yeah. I just thought, so what if women can do that too? That doesn't excuse any of that. That was just a horrible litany of revolting behavior from a man or a woman. I don't care. Anyway, I'm sort of...
And it's a man using... It's directed by a man,
Yeah, it's
presumably,
directed by a bloke.
Using
yeah.
a woman as a proxy to sort of...
get away with all
get
this.
Away, like, license him to do all those things.
Yeah, I thought it was a pretty lame video. Anyway, you know, it's got a certain notorious cachet, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And I guess it reminds people of the edgy 90s.
What if he'd been a dead woman?
Like a ghost.
Like a Sixth Sense kind of thing. How would you reveal that?
Why would that make it better?
Be Bruce Willis.
Bruce, if it was Bruce Willis dressed as a woman.
I like twisty Bruce, endings.
If it was Bruce Willis dressed as a woman.
Dressed as a woman saying, and they were all ghosts, or just, would they all be, he interacts with.
No, he interacts with real people.
But in the Sixth Sense, he only interacts with ghosts, right, doesn't right. he?
I think if it was, don't
or
worry
is
about.
He dead? Yeah, he is dead.
Listen, don't worry about him being dead. I think that complicates him. It's Bruce Willis dressed as a woman with prosthetic breasts, which are out on display.
Would that be less sexist?
Yes.
Yeah, it would be, because it would be more weird.
Yeah, that's how I would have done it. Anyway, so I'm saying to the audience, okay, now you can choose. And I didn't want to prejudice the whole thing too much, but I did sort of indicate that I was kind of down on Smack My Bitch Up a little bit. So I said, you know, you could choose between the non-sexist video for Breathe, which I consider to be a superior track for what it's worth, or you can go for the other video for Smack My Bitch Up, by The Prodigy, and vote now. And overwhelmingly, the audience voted for the Smack My Bitch Up video. Mm-hmm. At which point, a lady in the front row got up and said, and I think she was American, and she spun round to look at the whole of the audience, packed audience at the BFI, and she put up her middle finger and said, "And that's why you all can fuck off." And she she said it really loudly.
Really?
And flounced out of the cinema. I thought it was a very good gesture.
Quite ballsy.
Yeah, it was brilliant.
Yeah, I think that is kind of cool.
And people assumed that she was a plant, that we'd set it up. No, 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 it was great.
I think people who can do that, I have a lot of respect for that. It's not my style.
No.
I think it was, I don't know.
You've got to be confident to pull that off. I mean, she really did, though. It was great. I thought, good. I mean, I was a little embarrassed, obviously.
Really? And what did you say after that?
Because I felt complicit. I felt like one of the sexist people, you know, because I was just about to play this video. But I said, I called after her and I said, you know, it's okay. It turns out to be a woman. I don't know if you've seen it. As like a joke, really? You know. But I must say, I did admire her. I thought that was a good move.
Have you ever heckled?
No.
Because in a way, that's a different kind of heckle, because she's sort of heckling the audience, her own.
I mean, I felt like she was heckling all of us. You know, she was heckling me for even suggesting that I would play this.
But she wasn't talking to you. She said she turned round.
Yeah, she aimed it at, she directed it at the audience that had just voted for the video. Yeah. I thought it was good.
It's an interesting power dynamic, because...
Like, have you ever heckled someone that you strongly disapproved of on stage?
I think if I have... I don't think I have. I've occasionally it's crossed my mind.
Yeah.
What struck me from... Because I thought about doing a documentary on comedians for a while, and clearly, in the comedians' universe, hecklers loom quite large. And what you get is the feeling of comedians feeling very embattled, as though... That hecklers are out of order, that hecklers shouldn't exist. That, you know, they're on stage and the contract is that we talk and you shut up and listen. And I was struck by that, because I sort of thought, actually, no, it isn't quite that clear cut, because really, if what you're saying is absurdly unfunny or offensive, A, like, people are within their rights to call you out on that, and B, that a lot of the most interesting comedy seems to, for my purposes, come out of that encounter of dealing with hecklers. And that, you know, a heckler can be a boon, but evidently they're virtually never seen that way. Hecklers are seen as the lowest of the, like an unmitigated kind of enemy. And
rude. And I mean, I think the thing is,
you have no right to heckle.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, and I think I've thought that myself, and I think that the deal is, like, if the comedian wanted to just get his point across or his jokes across uninterrupted, then he needs to reposition the show a little bit. It needs to be more of a theatrical piece. And that way the audience can understand that it's not appropriate to engage with it the same way that if you went to see a Shakespeare play,
yeah,
you wouldn't start calling out, "That's a shit line. I could have done that better." Or, you know what I mean? "I don't understand that."
Right. Yeah.
You know, you wouldn't do that. You would. Anyone who did that would be mental.
Right. Although, can I add a caveat, which is that at the Globe, they don't invite hecklers, but they invite audience participation. And they put set it up as the kind of in the spirit of Shakespeare himself, that the people in the audience should shout things like "Give him a kiss" or
okay, like a panto situation,
kind of panto-esque.
That's what they used to do back in the day, is it?
Yeah, and actually, that's part of the vibe at the Globe, and I think, and it's kind of one of the things that makes the Globe kind of a cool experience.
Mm. Yeah, I can see that. Todd Barry, for example, he's pretty hard line. He doesn't really appreciate
any heckles.
Heckles, but what he has done is sort of cleverly. I mean, he does crowd work. He's done a whole special where he doesn't have any written material, just goes on and interacts with the crowd. So obviously, that's a big part of what a lot of comedians do, is so-called crowd work and stuff. But once you're in the flow of your bit, especially if it's quite a finely wrought piece, like Stuart Lee is someone who crafts his bits so that they need to be delivered in their entirety, and there's a certain rhythm to them, and you need to get from point A to B without it being interrupted, otherwise he really will be derailed.
Well, I saw a Stuart Lee show about 3 or 4 months ago, and it wasn't a heckle, but someone in a slightly brusque and out of context way called on him to perform a certain bit, and it threw him a tiny bit, and he came back to it, and he started slightly picking on the guy, not in a nasty way, but he kept worrying away and coming back to that guy and saying, "Oh, you want to see that bit," and blah, blah, blah. But it became kind of one of the best riffs in the whole show. And he said, "Like, I'm not doing that bit, you know, that bit's shit and I don't do it anymore." And then I can't remember how he kind of went on a thing with it, and then of course paid it off in the end by doing it. And it was, like I say, like it really, it was a pretty good show overall anyway, but that felt like maybe the best thing in it. You know, the fact that, because you're suddenly aware that here's, it's like, you know, this isn't planned and this is something.
Yeah, that real stuff always
feels special. It was really kind of cool.
Yeah, yeah.
We're halfway through the podcast. I think it's going really great. The conversation's flowing like it would between a geezer and his mate.
All right, mate. Hello, geezer. I'm pleased to see you.
Ooh, there's so much chemistry. It's like a science lab of talking.
I'm interested in what you said.
Thank you.
There's fun chat and there's deep chat. It's like Chris Evans is meeting Stephen Hawking.
You've got children, right?
Yes, I do.
Do they say a lot of funny stuff? Like, I mean, most parents enjoy the crazy things their children say.
Yeah, they do, I would say. Especially, they're 6 and 8. And as you know, they get older and they don't say, they come out with fewer weird expressions, but the six-year-old still occasionally can mangle English in an amusing way, and he's held on to a couple of things he used to say as a small boy, like, I don't know, because he thinks it makes it, it's cute, or I'm not sure why, but he has got a few little, nothing that funny though.
They're like little egg corn factories. You hadn't heard of egg corns?
No.
I mean, you know obviously what they are, but you've never heard that term.
No. I mean, they're a bit like malapropisms, aren't they?
I suppose so, yeah. But I like. I think, as I was saying to you yesterday, the nice thing about the egg corn is that the mangled version has a logic of its own.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
And so Hope, my daughter, is quite good for them because she's 5 and a half. That's maximum egg corn time.
Is it?
I think so, yeah. Because they're just, they half know what they're talking about, but not really.
Yeah.
And they're making their own sense of a world they don't fully understand. So, for example, we went to a fair the other day and she referred to the Ferris wheel as the fairest wheel.
That's quite good.
That's good. Because it's like fairest in the sense of most beautiful.
Yeah, that's good.
That's the fairest wheel. Let's go on that. I mean, not that there were other wheels there that were less fair.
That's good. I've got one, right? When I kept saying to my kids, I want to do an interview. I want to do an interview with you guys because, you know, while you're this age. This was a couple of years ago, and I sat them down, and they were excited about doing an interview, right?
Yeah.
Although they didn't really know what an interview was. So I sat them down, and I started filming, and I said, like, sit straight. And then they immediately, like, after about 30 seconds, said, well, this is so boring. When's it going to start? And I go, this is it. And Freddie goes, but I thought you were going to do an interview of me. Which I thought was quite good.
Where's the int?
Yeah. Aren't you doing an int of me? They're good because they reveal something about English and the way it's constructed.
What could that mean to him then? What is the int of him?
I don't know, but he just knew that...
Sorry.
It's fine. We'll pay attention to you later, electric piano. That's nice that it says, it's saying good night, saying, isn't it? That's what it was saying.
Oh, right, yeah.
I think.
I'm going away now.
Yeah,
that is nice.
Yeah, I think he didn't know what an int was, but he wanted one done of him.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't feel like he was getting one done of him.
No, this is not the int of me that I was after. Hope the other day as well said, she asked for an apple, and you know, a lot of the times they go for an apple. And she said, no, don't slice it. I'm just going to eat it like a grown-up. So I said, all right, go on then. I said, you make sure you eat it, though, because don't just take one bite and then you leave the apple there and it goes brown and yeah, it's no good. That goes in the bin. That's a waste. So a few minutes later, she came back and she'd done a pretty good job. It was just the core left. And she said, look, Dad, I ate it right down to the nuts. And
nice.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty good.
But what was she trying to say? Down to the...
Pips.
Oh, so would that be an egg corn?
I don't know if that's... I mean, that's certainly in the egg corn universe.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I guess not, because it's not a proper
technically
phrase.
That's not an egg corn.
No, it's not an actual phrase that she's mangling there. Yeah. It's a concept. She is... it's an enjoyable confusion of pips and nuts that then takes on an altogether less appropriate...
Yeah.
...thing. How about this? Are your children at an age yet where they are beginning to use phrases that you find annoying and you think maybe you should curb? I'll give you an example.
Okay.
Frank and Nat, who are a bit older than your chaps, I think, they are 9 and 11. Natty especially, who watches a lot of viral videos online and likes all that world.
Yeah.
He has started to say lol.
Right.
If he thinks something is funny. So the other day at supper, he sort of said, someone said something amusing, and he just went, lol.
Really? Like, he said it...
He actually used it in the way that you would think that it is supposed to be used.
Like he was online?
Yeah. He just said, lol. And
FFS.
My heart sank a little bit. Because obviously, you know, if you're going to pull out lol, you would want... to have lol covered in quite a lot of irony sauce.
Yeah, that's funny. Did you say anything?
Well, I thought about it. I thought, like, wow, I really don't want my son to just say lol unironically. For Christ's sake, I thought you were saying good night.
He's not settling.
Oh, I've got to turn it off. That's the secret. There we go.
It wasn't saying goodnight. It was saying,
if
I'm
you want
still
me to
here.
Stop, yeah, exactly. just a little reminder that I am still switched on. I thought, well, maybe this is just my problem. You know what I mean? He's just having fun. He's not even 10. He can say what he wants. But then I just thought, should I say anything just to give him a little heads up that an unironic lol is punishable by death?
Well, what did you do?
I think I just said, don't say lol.
Did you?
Yeah. And then Frank was wielding the Seinfeld-derived, really?
Is that from Seinfeld?
Yeah, he came
up with it.
There's
such a really epidemic.
Really?
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 Really? That gun kind of puts my back up when anyone uses it.
Mate.
It's so rampant at the moment.
It really is. Because it seems to be just a all-in-one personality package, doesn't it?
Yeah.
If you use that, then it's like shorthand for I've got a quirky sense of ironic detachment, or it's like a comment on what's
even
going
John
on.
Stewart's used it a couple of times. It's also kind of a, well, I'm not going to make a joke. I'm just going to signal that a joke is being made without making one.
Right.
Really? And it seems. It's
but you see
lazy,
that really that you just did was too animated. There, it's supposed to be wearier.
Really?
Really? This is happening. You know.
Can't it be really?
No, because that's something different.
What's that then?
That's more engaged and interested. That's just
I don't like either one.
No, I don't.
Really? I don't like it.
Yeah. So would you say anything if one of your fellows...
kids, I'm trying to think. Occasionally they pick up a phrase like, this isn't a weird phrase. They just got into saying, but that's not fair on me. And it became like a little
catchphrase
that they'd learned, relatively young, and it was just, I just put my back up a bit. I didn't say anything about it.
You didn't?
No.
Well, this is the thing. You see, I did mention it. I said to Frank, like, you know, Frank, really? It gets used a lot. You may want to search for something a little less...
less, like, hacky. Like, you were actually critiquing him from a comedian's perspective.
I
get some new material.
I didn't feel like it was from a comedian's perspective. Either way, it's not really good behavior from a dad, though, is it? To start making your child feel self-conscious about the way they speak. Especially if they're just having fun flexing their muscles in a world of...
I find myself sparring with my kids sometimes because I find it funny, and then I think, am I sort of training them to be facetious at school, which I don't really want to be doing.
Yeah.
Like, you know, just silly things like... oh, that's great. You know, call me when your brain grows back. Or, you know, just like insulting...
Playground
put-downs, yeah.
Yeah.
And because I find it amusing, you know. I think it's, maybe that's not good parenting.
Call me when your brain grows back is good, though. And I mean, obviously the teacher wouldn't really want to hear that.
I don't know what the right thing... I just enjoy that... I don't know, like, but I've always found those playground put downs quite funny.
Yes.
And so, like, do you remember the one you'd go up to someone and you'd say, are you a bummer tied to a tree?
Yeah, that's
and
right.
They go, no. And then you go, bummer on the loose, and run around.
Yeah.
And I always thought that was quite funny. And then there's a few like that. Or you say, like, you go up with an apple in your hand, you say, do you want a fruit punch? Remember that one?
I do remember that one.
And they go, yeah, okay. And then here's the fruit, here's your punch, and you punch them.
Yeah.
So, like, I find that amusing. And then I began thinking that would be quite a funny bit if the Adam and Joe show was still on as a grown-up, to film you doing that to other grown-ups. You know, as a remote piece, like, yeah, out on the street, and what kind of reaction, like, can you still use those put downs?
I think you'd be in trouble with Bummer on the Loose, wouldn't you? That's not
sort of like that
LGBT community may have a problem with that.
But it's not LGBT that just bum, isn't it?
Yeah, of course.
I mean, that's
true.
A lot
that's
of people
true.
Bum.
But in the place,
and actually,
screen...
is that about bumming? What is bumming?
Well, sodomy, isn't it? Are we talking about sodomy?
I guess.
But, I mean, if we want to be bald about it.
I think that's gender neutral. I think you could make a pretty good case.
Sure, everyone loves bumming. But I think in the playground, though, they were mainly being homophobic, weren't they?
Maybe. Gosh. I think you could get away with it, but maybe I'm
kidding
myself.
I didn't like the violent ones, I have to be honest with you.
Like
Did
what?
You ever deliver the fruit punch then?
No.
No, because some people...
No,
I remember,
I would just play act it.
Okay. Well, that's the nice way, but some people used to go for a real punch. I got hit
really?
In the face once when someone came over and invited me to smell the cheese. Did you ever get that?
Oh,
it was,
yeah.
They would open up their palm, and then they would
Then
they would lay their fist on their other palm. So you open up your left hand,
yeah,
and then you lay your right hand as a fist on that palm. And then you say, smell the cheese. And you think, oh, I don't know what's going to happen here. I'll give it a go. So you lean in and take a smell. And then they biff you on the nose.
No, I didn't. That's not cool.
Hate that.
I like the more random ones, like, did you hold your fingers crossed and you say, break the cross.
Oh, yeah. Break I'm going to break it right now. I'm...
You killed Jesus.
Oh. I remember that one.
That is just bizarre.
Yeah.
You killed Jesus.
I think there was variations on that as well, wasn't
was
there?
I don't know any others.
You killed a fairy, I think.
Really?
But it's worse to kill Jesus than a fairy, I think.
Why would there be a fairy on a cross? That makes zero. That makes even less sense. I didn't think it was possible to make less sense, but that makes even less sense.
Yeah, that's of course it's about the cross. I thought it was just about, like, this is a special thing.
I love
made,
that you were doing that and you didn't even know what it meant.
Had no clue. I'm drifting through my whole life like this. And then what will your policy be on swearing? Do you swear in front of your children?
No, I basically don't. Sometimes my wife does.
Mm-hmm.
I don't...
kind of bombs is she dropping?
Well, everything but the C word, I would say.
Really?
Not deliberately. It's not a policy, but...
Sure, it happens. It slips out every now and again.
She's very emotionally available. And so... I don't, though. I don't... Maybe you'd need to get someone else... I mean, I feel like I don't.
Mm-hmm.
But,
I mean,
one really wants to.
No.
No one thinks, like, oh, that's fine.
In very, like, when they got past a certain age, when they were old enough to understand that I was angry about something and what it was, and I wanted to kind of really hit my point home, I might wheel out I might say, listen, that is just bullshit.
Whoa.
Bullshit. And then they would know, like, whoa, Dad's talking to me like an actual grown-up. He's serious about this.
What would it? What kind of thing was it?
It would be like, oh, Dad, I didn't realise, you know. I was like, I asked you to switch that off 10 minutes ago. What's going on? I didn't realise.
Do you think shit?
That is bullshit.
Whoa. Did you give them that look that you just gave me?
Sure I did. Absolutely. Do you not find that there's a degree of acting that you need to do every now and again that really stretches you?
What about BS? Why don't you just go FFS? That is BS. You
really?
Should just... Maybe you need to speak to them using more internet acronyms.
I probably should have done. Yeah. Dad, I didn't realise I had to switch it off. Really?
Did he... has he ever... Has Nat ever said rotful?
Rotful.
Well, I think rotful's okay as well.
On the internet, you don't put the T in there.
I've seen rotful. Rotful sounds quite good as well.
Rotful. Yeah, but rotful is something else. Rotful just conjures up images of rotting.
Rotful. Rolling on the floor laughing.
Whereas rotful puts you in mind of fun things like...
Like Rolf Harris?
Rotful Harris. That's the thing.
Did
your parents swear in front of you?
Yes. They used to say, Christ, Jesus Christ, they used to say a lot.
Wow, you're counting that as swearing.
Wouldn't you?
Taking the Lord's name in vain. I mean,
anything you wouldn't want to hear your kids say is pretty much a swear word, isn't it?
I suppose.
Like, I don't like hearing them say, oh my God, I didn't like hearing that.
I know, it's true, isn't it? It's funny.
I'd say, please, say gosh, and which I know sounds really lame, doesn't
no,
it?
No, I do the same, because and it's not like I'm very religious, but I just don't think it's attractive to hear like a little child saying, oh my God. It just sounds too disrespectful.
It's too strong.
It's too strong. Why is it too strong? Like, if it doesn't mean anything to them and it doesn't... You know, like,
it's too strong because... There's a sizable minority of people who'd be offended by it,
yeah.
I think. It does have some cultural overtones.
Yeah, of course.
And God might hear.
And then he would totally fuck up your shit.
He would be fucking... He'd go schizo. He'd give you leprosy. Really?
Really?
There's some other ones that are...
What are the other ones?
I can't actually think of any... any of those things that becomes like a kind of like a cultural...
Like a meme.
Like a meme. That like, do you remember the time in the 90s when everything was somethingly challenged? like vertically challenged, follicularly challenged, or follicularly challenged.
Yes, when it was sort of gently lampooning the world of PC.
PC, yeah, and then it felt like it was 3 or 4 years before that passed through the system, and then for a while it was, don't go there. Don't go there. Don't even go there.
Which talk then, to the hand there was.
I once heard a story that Norm... This is like kind of private gossip, but that Norm Macdonald went out with Elle Macpherson, and that the reason he split up with her was because she kept saying, don't go there. Don't go there. And it was driving him nuts. Like, that is total gossip. It's probably got no substance to it, but don't even go there. And, like, it was just winding him up. And then, like, what other ones there was, like, for a while, it wasn't as widespread, but people's like, don't be that guy.
Oh, that's still happening.
Really?
Yeah.
A new one is, although it's not comic, but it's, there was an ad I saw and it said, she's got this. And then my older boy, 8 years old, sometimes says, I got this.
Mm.
And it's the idea, like, I've got this. It's like a quintessential, it's a very of the moment catchphrase.
I mean, you know, I'm enjoying this conversation as if I'm totally above using all these phrases myself, which is not the case. I do, you know, I find myself slipping into using the odd sort of media cliche or meme or whatever you want to call it.
Like, the ones I resent are the ones that are slightly, there's a danger that you would be using them for real. So, like, and all the more pretentious ones, like in Starbucks, I don't use the, I don't ask for a venti or a... maybe I do sometimes. I think I've started doing that.
What's that?
For a while, I had a policy of... they don't have small, medium, and large. They have tall, grande, and venti.
But they'll understand if you say medium.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
But technically, you're supposed to be saying tall, grande, or venti.
For crying
And for a while, I was like, that is so stupid and pretentious that I refuse to do that. And then you just... get worn down, don't you? And one day you're going like, I'll have a grande.
Grande's not as bad as venti.
Venti's it comes from I tweeted that I refuse to say that, and I only then realized from the replies that it means 20. Like, I guess it's a 20
in Italian.
20 what, the ounce of something in Italian? Yeah,
twat points. 20 twat points,
yeah,
is what that is. Shit. No, that's no good.
Are there other ones that get on your nerves?
Well, you see, I'm doing it right there. That's no good.
Right. That's just English.
Yeah, but it's something that I've picked up from somewhere, like a little dirty disease. I do, when people, you know, I get criticized sometimes for when someone says, how you doing? I say, I'm good.
Yeah.
Go with the American. And they say, or rather, I've heard other people say...
I wasn't asking for your moral status.
I've heard some people saying, you know what drives me mental is when people say, I'm good. You know, I'm well is what you want to say. I'm very well, thank you.
I'm well.
I'm good. No, it's all right, I got it, I'm good. Because I That's the thing, for a lot of Brits and for my sons, I can see that they like the sound of American patter.
Yeah.
And the conversational rhythms, and it's very attractive, you know.
What about dude? Are you all right with saying dude?
You know, I don't say dude, but I don't mind if other people say it.
As policy, or you're just afraid?
Maybe I'd say it sometimes, but you say it quite a bit.
Too much.
Do you ever think about when you're saying it?
Yes, and sometimes I think, is this authentically me, or am I just adopting something that's in the culture?
But you know, you were probably the reason that I started saying man.
Oh, man.
But it was you and a group of sort of hippie guys at school that used to
probably
say it.
Was it?
And were you, I mean, the hardcore hippie guys were just, they were sort of proper hippies.
Man on the end of things, like, oh, I don't do that, man. Or man as a kind of vocative.
Hey,
like,
man.
Man, what are you doing?
No, yeah, not like, oh, man, that's not so bad. But, hey, how you doing, man?
How you doing, man? I don't think I do that anymore.
Do you not?
But then we had teachers who'd say, like,
that was different.
Shape yourself up, man.
That's different. That's army. That's an army man.
Is it?
Come on, man, for goodness sake.
For goodness sake, man.
Buxton, man, what are you doing?
Because they wanted to say boy, but maybe they thought it was too...
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know. It's funny. It's like writing prose. Like, would you use a sort of English voice or an American voice? And is dude okay? Or I don't know where the chips are going to fall. But I try not to be too fussy.
Yeah. I mean, I guess people are trying to hang on to something that they consider authentically theirs as a Brit. You know, they sort of say, well, let's not just talk exactly the same way that Americans talk. Let's hang on to some sense of identity, which is, I would say, a fair beef, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Yeah. Do you like how do you do?
Yeah.
What's the answer to that?
I do very well, thank you.
For real? Yeah. I do very well.
I do very
that
well.
That doesn't sound right. Isn't it I'm fine?
Yeah, if you want to be colloquial.
I do very well. I've never heard anyone...
Thank
I
you.
I think it's just... Mm-hmm.
Thank you, I do very well.
I don't think that's right. That sounds like it's an innuendo. I do very well.
Well, it is if you say it, if you raise your eyebrows while you say it, then it's innuendo, yeah.
Well, I do very well, thank you. If you give me a chance, you might find out.
No, that's different. I should say at this point, I don't generally say I do very well, thank you. But I may start now.
Oh, that's funny.
Sometimes I've thought about saying to an audience when I go on, would this be funny? Like to say, hello, good evening, how do you do it? What's that? That's nothing.
Was that what you? Is that it? Did you say that right?
I mean,
how do you do it?
This is the first time that I have articulated it in words. It's been like a vague thought that's been spinning around my head.
It was funny just then.
Yeah.
There's a funny opening bit Steve Martin used to do. Come on, and says, "Very nice to be here," and he'd be playing his banjo, and then he'd move like a few inches to the side, and go, "Very nice to be here," and it would go on for a little bit, which always was. That's a good joke, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a peach.
Where do you stand? Because I've noticed you don't sign your emails, Kiss, and I don't want to say my feelings are hurt. But I've noticed that about you, that you don't generally...
Do I not give you any love?
You don't, as a habit, you don't
put I thought an you were, X on. I must say, I thought you were on my love list. So sometimes I write L-O-V-E.
Maybe you've done that. And I don't want to throw wild accusations. I mean, something I've noticed in being in America is that American men, at least, do not sign kisses... To each other, even quite close friends.
Do they not?
No.
What are they doing then?
They're just saying best, yours.
Best, yeah.
And in Britain, that's considered quite normal, I think.
Doing the kisses?
Yeah.
Yeah, Cornballs does kisses.
Yeah, I think that's pretty normal. But as I've been getting a kind of, not anxiety, but sort of a sense of I need some consistency. So about a year ago, I more or less eliminated exes. From my any kind of correspondence.
I must say, I've never been a kiss guy. I'll give, if I'm emailing my wife, she'll get a kiss.
An ex?
Yeah. But, and if it's a close friend, they'll get love. Or if it's, you know, if it's someone I really like and I yeah. think that they're not going to be weird about me writing L-O-V-E, then they'll get love. Everyone else gets best now.
Yeah.
Which I actually got off Cornballs. That's something he picked up. A lot of these things are things that you pick up from other people, don't you find? Like
yes.
emailing techniques. One great technique that I picked up that I really like, although I get embarrassed whenever I email this person because I feel like they can see the point at which I nicked it off them, is double spacing the email.
Right.
So every line gets double spaced. Because it just makes it look... It's much easier to read.
Every single line. So you hit return...
Twice.
Not just between paragraphs.
Yeah, between paragraphs. But you know, like for an email...
It's a lot of them are just one line paragraphs.
Exactly. It's just one line.
I like that too. I sometimes do that.
Yeah. But I do it religiously now. And I, as I say, I sometimes feel self-conscious when I email this bloke that maybe he's thinking, you got that off me, you dick. But why
it's
would
not
he think
that original?
Is it not?
I don't think like no, there's one guy who's like pleased with himself that he invented
yeah.
breaking up his paragraphs.
No, exactly.
Get, if he's hanging on to that, get a grip.
He's got other things going on.
I had a guy come in once. He says, like, I've got a friend and he wants to copyright. This was about 15 years ago. Like, there was something, like, how do you copyright, like, a word, like a phrase? And I was like, what do you mean? I was like, well, it's something to do with the internet and emails, okay? And he just wants to copyright a phrase to do with internets and emails and addresses, okay? But how would you do it? Like, he was ostentatiously not telling me in case I ran off with the idea, right? And I said, what, e-dress? And he's like, yeah. I was like, why would you even copyright that? That's stupid. But he thought that was worth money, I think. Like, I've, e-dress, it's so brilliant. It's so simple. It's going to catch on. I want to capitalize on it.
Do you have to go?
I do have to go. Oh, yeah, that's our guest.
All right. Hey, thanks for talking to me, man.
Was that the end?
Well, we're going to have to we're going to have to conclude. I'll think about the thing I invented.
Really?
Really? Thanks, man.
This is an advert for Squarespace. Hey guys, it's Broshak with me, Paul Broshak. We got Mike here. We're going to talk about his new MMA comedy special. We're going to talk about his view counts, and we're going to talk about conspiracy theories. What's up, Mike?
Hello, Paul.
Hey, brother.
I'm fine, thank you. I don't want to talk about any of those things anymore.
You don't?
No. I want to talk about... I built a website, Paul.
All right. Stream some fights, settle some beefs, stick it to the elites, that kind of thing.
No. It's mainly dog pictures, Paul. And I did it on Squarespace. Have you heard of Squarespace? I went to squarespace.com/Buxton and I did a free trial. And I tried some of the beautiful templates, Paul, and I typed things in. I dragged in pictures of the dogs. And before I knew it, I had a website, Paul. So I bought it and I've made some very sweet dog t-shirts and I sell those on the shop on the website.
Uh-huh. But do you still fight and stuff?
A little bit, but not really. Oh, and Paul, I wanted to tell you that when it comes time to buy your website or domain on Squarespace, if you use the offer code Buxton, you save 10%. Paul.
Thanks, Mike. Where'd you do that free trial?
Squarespace.com/Buxton.
And how sweet were the dogs?
Very.
A little bit of an abrupt ending there to the ramble chat with Louis Theroux. Apologies for that if you're traumatized by abruptness. Thanks so much to Louis. He'll be back on the podcast at some future point, I have no doubt. The only thing that I felt a little bit weird about in that conversation, I always feel weird about one thing in a conversation and think, I feel as if I need to explain myself, was the bit about casting aspersions on my son's choice of phraseology, you know, with him saying lol and ruffle. And I was admitting as much to Louis. I admitted that I felt kind of bad about having mentioned it, because that's no good, is it? You should be able to say what you want when you're little. And coming from me as well, I'll pick up any rubbish phrase and it'll just become part of my lexicon. I noticed that I've been saying right a lot. I don't think it's like a rubbish phrase exactly, but it's a conversational tick that I've picked up, right? And now I'm saying right at the end of sentences, right? And I think I got it off Ridley Scott. I don't hang out with Ridley Scott, but I watch a lot of interviews that he gives, like all the alien interviews and stuff on the DVDs there. I've watched all of them a number of times. And he says right at the end of sentences, right? And I think maybe it rubbed off on me. Well, that's okay. I mean, it's Riddles. You know, if Riddles wants to rub anything off on me, that's absolutely fine. Anyway, so I feel like a bit of a hypocrite for giving my son a hard time for just trying out a bit of groovy internet speak. He doesn't say lol anymore, I'm glad to say, or ruffle. The thing that he came out with recently was as a kind of triumphant flourish at the end of a sentence when he felt that he'd sussed me or his mum out. He said, babushka! That's the thing now. I don't know if he made it up or if he's seen it on a show or... babushka! While pointing at me with a triumphant grin. And I thought, well... I'm happy with babushka. It puts me in mind of Kate Bush, so what's wrong with that? The next Adam Buxton podcast will feature Joe Cornish. I've already recorded a conversation with Joe. It took us a little while to acclimatize to the new dynamic in the podcast. You know, with me as the host, him as my guest. I was kind of asking him questions about what he'd been up to recently, and, you know, we never really talked about that kind of thing on the Six Music Show. And indeed, on the Six Music Show, there was a very different kind of atmosphere because it was live, it was the Big British Castle, it was the morning, it was not appropriate to swear, it was not really appropriate to talk about anything particularly serious. You know, there was no rule against it, but we felt like we were happier just being silly, you know, exclusively. And on this podcast, it's nice to be able to drift into quite serious areas occasionally and have an actual real conversation rather than just keeping it 100% goofy, you know. I think maybe what I'll do is put out the conversation that we had and then put out another one sometime around Christmas, because I think Joe's going to come back, maybe pay a visit to the Nutty Room, and we're going to do the whole exchanging of presents thing that we used to do on Six Music at Christmas time, because that's not what we did last time. We ended up just having a big long discussion about movies and TV shows that we've enjoyed this year. Joe gave me a lot of good recommendations, and but maybe it'll be a bit frustrating for people who wanted something a bit more festive and silly. So, being desperate to please, I'll try and sort out both. But no guarantees, you know, I'll just have to see how it goes. But anyway, you should expect a special Christmassy podcast gift plopping through your internet box sometime around Christmas Day. That's the deal. All right. What else? Oh, yeah. I wanted to say thanks very much to all the people who gave me technical advice when I asked for it on Twitter about compression settings for this podcast. I'm trying out some new compression settings this week, courtesy of Paul Farrer, a composer who also created the daytime quiz show 1000 Heartbeats, which features a live chamber orchestra. The contestants are hooked up to a heart monitor. They have to answer questions, as many questions as they can, within 100 beats of their heart. I think that's how it works. And there's a little live chamber orchestra there that play live at the tempo of the contestants' heartbeats. And this was the brain baby of Paul Farrer. Anyway, thanks so much, Paul, for your help. Geostats for the podcast. I'll just give you the bottom figures. Just the one listen for the Adam Buxton podcast in the following territories: Botswana, Mongolia, Papua New Guinea, Paraguay, and Turkmenistan. Not interested. If you're in any of those countries, or, as I've said before, in any other far-flung and exotic location, do get in touch. Let me know what your life is like. Paint me a detailed picture with words. As long as they are interesting words and not boring turd words. That sounded a bit rude, didn't it? But you know what I'm saying. Get in touch. I'd love to hear from you and find out about your life. But right now, I'm going to wrap things up. And I'm going to do so. Just fade down the Wario's Woods music there. My remix of the Wario's Woods music, which I don't know. I don't know where you find it. It's something I taped off a video game that was playing on a Virgin Atlantic flight 15 years ago, and I stuck my mini disc into the armrest of my seat because I'd become so obsessed with this piece of music. I just taped a 30-second chunk, then looped it and put some hand claps on, and there you have your outro music bed, composed by Shinobu and Soyo Oka, 1994. That's all I could find out about it. So I'm going to fade that down, and by way of tribute to a podcast that's been mentioned a few times on this one, I'm gonna play a little guitar. Right. Haven't played this in a while. I think the last time I played this, the Les Paul Epiphone copy, was when we were doing a show called The Last Chances for Channel 4 years ago, 2003. And amazingly, despite my prodigious guitar talent, I just never play anymore. I don't know why. It's nearly in tune still, even though I literally haven't touched it for about 10 years. I bet you I still got it, though. ¶¶
Posey regularly wees on the wooden floor in the kitchen. That's why there's weird stains there. I love you, bye.